The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Bid and Siegel Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but how can we have fun around Christmas time when organizations like the ACLU keep stealing our joy by protesting manger scenes or not allowing public schools to hold Christmas parties unless they call it a winter carnival? Well, we do plan to have a lighter, fun show today, despite the war on Christmas that's increasing every year. I will be reviewing my favorite and least favorite holiday movies and videos. But first, we can even take our sources of irritation and turn them into fun. Please welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show the politically correct Christmas carolers.
On the first day of Christmas, my high school gave to you a new regulation or two. On the second day of Christmas, my high school gave to you
two busted bells
and a new regulation or two. On the third day of Christmas, my high school gave to you
three thick threats,
two busted bells, and a new regulation or two. On the fourth day of Christmas, my high school gave to you
four fearsome fines,
three thick threats, two busted bells, and a new regulation or two. On the fifth day of Christmas, my high school gave to you
ACLU?
Four fearsome fines, three thick threats, two busted bells, and a new regulation or two. On the sixth day of Christmas, my high school gave to you
six sentence students.
ACLU! Four fearsome fines, three thick threats, two busted bells, and a new regulation or two. On the seventh day of Christmas, my high school gave to you
seven styles of stupid,
six-sentence students, ACLU. Four fearsome fines, three thick threats, two busted bells, and a new regulation or two. On the eighth day of Christmas, my high school gave to you
eight acts of Islam,
seven styles of stupid, six-sentence students, ACLU. Four fearsome fines, three thick threats, two busted bells, and a new regulation or two. On the ninth day of Christmas, my high school gave to you
nine nauseous neighbors,
eight acts of Islam, seven styles of stupid, six-sentence students, ACLU. Four fearsome fines, three thick threats, two busted bells, and a new regulation or two. On the tenth day of Christmas, my high school gave to you
10 torn up treetops,
9 nauseous neighbors, 8 acts of Islam, 7 styles of stupid, 6 sentence students, ACLU. Four fearsome fines, three thick threats, two busted bells, and a new regulation or two. On the 11th day of Christmas, my high school gave to you
11 lawyers leaping,
10 torn up treetops, 9 nauseous neighbors, 8 acts of Islam, 7 styles of stupid, 6 sentence students, ACLU. Four fearsome fines, three thick threats, two busted bells, and a new regulation or two. On the 12th day of Christmas, my high school gave to you
12 terms of prison,
11 lawyers leaping, 10 torn up treetops, 9 nauseous neighbors, 8 acts of Islam, 7 styles of stupid, 6 sentence students, ACLU. Four fearsome fines, three thick threats, two busted bells, and a new regulation or two.
Well, after that, I think I owe you a real song. How about the beautiful music of Karen Carpenter?
Born in a stable. table he came here for me. Born of a virgin he came here for me. God's only son come to set the world free. Born of God's love and he came here for me.
This is Lori K. Lewis, a frequent co-host on The Bob Siegel Show, Talk Radio 1170 on KCBQ. If you have questions or comments during this radio broadcast, please call Bob at this toll-free number, 1-888-344-1170. Again, the number is 1-888-344-1170. We'd like to hear what you have to say.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Today we do a pop culture edition. Are you looking forward to curling up around the TV with loved ones to enjoy any one of those countless classic holiday films? Having trouble deciding which one to watch first? Well, be of good cheer and keep the faith. Your old pal Bob has carried the day. I'll navigate you through that holiday section of the video store or Netflix site while avoiding the landmines and finishing with a bag of picks full of favorite flicks. Before we get to the reviews themselves, I realize that the suspense here is just about killing you, so let's cut right to the bone. First, my top 10 list, then my explanation. Some of these will not surprise you at all. They're on everybody's list. Others on the list are debatable indeed. Many will take issue with me. Just remember to be kind. It is the Hollywood season after all. Okay, here we go. I said Hollywood season. I meant holiday season, but Hollywood's holiday season. That you could actually say both. Bob's highly recommended top 10 holiday videos. Number one, It's a Wonderful Life. Number two, Miracle on 34th Street, if we're talking about the original version, not those stupid remakes. Number three, Scrooge, the musical version, starring Albert Finney. Number four, A Charlie Brown Christmas. Number five, How the Grinch Stole Christmas. I do mean the animated version that's shown on TV every year, not the movie. Number six, A Christmas Story. Number seven, The Santa Claus. Number eight will surprise you, The Santa Claus 2. Number nine, Jingle All the Way. Number 10, Home Alone. Okay, the obvious first question. Why did I not pick the favorite classic of many, White Christmas? Well, there's a reason. Although I can objectively admit, that this was a well-made, spectacular production with a talented cast, personally, I just didn't like it very much. How's that for blatant honesty? A good musical, to be sure. White Christmas simply doesn't do anything for me over the holidays. Besides, the song White Christmas is one of my least favorite Christmas carols. Not that it's a bad song. The melody is actually quite nice, and Bing Crosby sang this Irving Berlin composition about as well as anybody possibly could. Still, the tune is overdone and plays on the radio far too frequently, often with jazzed-up versions that mess with the tempo and change the melody line, massacring the piece altogether. I'm dreaming of a white, yes, white, ever so white Christmas. You get the idea. It makes our Christmas just a little less merry. True, deadpan versions of the song are not the fault of the movie itself. But what can I say? A bad taste has been left in my mouth. Sometimes a film can be good, but is still not our own cup of tea. If you love White Christmas, please realize that no harm is really being done here. After all, White Christmas is on everyone else's movie list. But for me to place a film on my own sacred scroll, I must be able to actually enjoy the thing, whether it was objectively good or not. Obvious question two. Bob, do you have any favorites that did not make your top 10 list? Yes, Walt Disney's Babes in Toyland from the very early 60s. It was delightful, brilliant, horrible, and stupid all at the same time. This means it's good enough for me to personally enjoy, but terrible enough to quarantine it from my top 10 list. I'll explain the good and the bad vibes of Babes in Toyland later on in today's program. Obvious question three. Bob, do you have a list of the worst Christmas movies? Oh, yes. Thank you for asking. Can you sense that I'm just salivating right now? However, and this is really important, although many awful holiday movies have been released, the few I personally hate are so bad, they deserve to be highlighted in isolation. Therefore, this will not be much of a list. The absolute worst Christmas movie ever made was How the Grinch Stole Christmas. I refer to Ron Howard's remake of the Dr. Seuss animated classic. You will notice that the original version, the animated version, made my top 10 list. This means I feel as much admiration for the television classic as I feel contempt for the remake. The other worst, and many will disagree with me, is Elf. I will elaborate on both movies later on in today's program. Okay, I let the cat out of the bag. Now you know the favorites and the least favorites of your old pal Bob, as if this has been keeping you up at nights. Now, the reasons behind my top 10 list. First of all, you should know, the more familiar the movie, the less I felt I needed to spend a lot of time explaining myself. One and two, It's a Wonderful Life and Miracle on 34th Street. Now, I gave the number one spot to Wonderful Life, but it's really closer to a photo finish. Both movies deserve the status of classic. They are not only the best Christmas movies of all time, they are among the best movies of all time, period. Now, I'm not sure any comments are necessary for films that so obviously exist in the stratosphere, but I will make one observation about fantasy in general. When dealing with far-fetched stories such as Santa Claus or angels sending people into alternate time realities, the writing and acting becomes even more crucial. If we don't accept the people, we do not believe in their fantastic tale either. Both movies were cleverly written and expertly performed by actors who breathed real life into the characters. The third movie, Scrooge, the musical version. Excellent acting and well-written dialogue, true to the style of the original Dickens classic, and filled out with pleasant musical numbers which enhance rather than take away from the story. The style of music and street choreography may remind some of you of the musical film Oliver. Added dialogue includes a more detailed look at the many paupers who owe Scrooge money, and the very clever twist of Scrooge finding himself in hell, courtesy of the Ghost of Christmas Future, of course. I do not let a Christmas go by anymore without watching this movie. Although most professional reviews, when it came out, praised the acting and gave, of course, obligatory kudos to the Dickens story itself, I was disappointed to see many critics unhappy with the songs composed by Leslie Bercuse, who also did Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Some labeled the music as bad to mediocre, and I couldn't disagree more. If you have read such reviews, do yourself a favor. Ignore them. Oh, certainly, in any musical, there will be one or two pieces that you could have done without. But most of the score is excellent. From the extremely clever and fun number, Thank You Very Much, to the sweet melodic song Happiness, Scrooge the musical should take its place with the greats, and maybe will someday. Remember, there was a time when It's a Wonderful Life was considered a flop, too. Number four on my list, A Charlie Brown Christmas. Why? Come on. It's Charlie Brown. Need we say any more? Let's move on. Number five, How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Please, let me say this again. I couldn't say this too many times. Do not confuse this annual animated television gem with that milk dud Jim Carrey gave us under the direction of Ron Howard. Dr. Seuss was a genius. As for Ron Howard, well, he's normally a decent director, but if any genius lurks inside, it hibernated as he marched to the parade of remakes. Never mind, my critique for Ron Howard's version comes up later. For now, try to pretend that movie was never produced and instead make sure you never let a Christmas pass without seeing the real story. It is as fun as it is charming. Number six on my list, A Christmas Story. Not as heartwarming as some of the others, but for over three decades now, people have absolutely loved it. Set in the 40s, the story nevertheless looks and feels quite familiar to anyone who remembers what it was like to grow up with a typical mom, a temperamental dad, and a generic bully. By the way, am I alone in this, or is Ralphie just about the funniest looking kid ever to show his little mug on the screen? He is perfect for the part. The adult narrations blended with Ralphie's dopey expressions were undoubtedly an inspiration for television's The Wonder Years. Number seven, The Santa Claus. A unique idea and fresh take on the Santa Claus legend. This time we learn that Santa Claus is actually the title of an office to be filled. When one Santa dies, another takes his place. The movie would not have worked without the subtle but piercing wit of Tim Allen. His timing and facial mannerisms are priceless. Number eight. Now, this is going to surprise you. The Santa Claus 2. Two Santa Claus movies on one list. I know. And if you've heard me do movie reviews before, you know I hate sequels. And you're right. Normally, I hate sequels. I hate them with a passion. This movie was an exception, a very rare exception. And for an important reason, there really was a new story to tell this time. The producers, for a change, chose not to retread movie one. As a matter of fact, although its predecessor was a good movie, The Santa Claus 2 is a great movie. I ranked it after one only because the originality of the premise owes everything to the first chapter. Elizabeth Mitchell, known today for her intriguing roles on Lost and V, was very convincing as a stuffy but three-dimensional high school principal who falls in love with Tim Allen. Who would have thought that in the midst of talking animals, plastic giant toy villains, and flying sleighs, a movie could be so convincingly romantic? This is another verification to what I said before. If we believe the actors, we believe the entire film. Oh, yes. While we are on the subject, I guess I should say something about the Santa Claus 3. It was as bad as 2 was good. Everything one fears in a cookie-cutter sequel and much, much more. How's this for an original premise? Santa works too hard and doesn't spend enough time with his wife. Wow. Where, oh, where have we ever witnessed a fresh angle like that? The North Pole is also visited by his in-laws, and hold on to your seats, they don't get along. Oh, my sides. This pathetic send-up includes a lame attempt to mix It's a Wonderful Life with Kris Kringle. Supposing Scott Calvin had never become Santa Claus. Just how depressing would life be up in the North Pole? The blend worked about as well as a juicy sirloin steak with peanut butter. The only bright spot is Martin Short. Hilarious. As the evil Jack Frost who wants to replace Santa Claus. Now, I won't say Short saved the movie. Not even Jesus himself could save this movie. But Short does get a good deal of screen time, so this may be worth watching once. Still, all in all, it stinks like one of those animals inhabiting the rebel ice planet Hoth. You know, the one Han Solo thought smelled bad on the outside until he opened it up with a lightsaber and got a whiff of the inside. Number 9 on my top 10 list, Jingle All the Way. I can't call Schwarzenegger a bad actor anymore. After all, he fooled us into thinking he was a Republican when he ran for governor. A genuine Academy Award caliber performance. Anyway, this movie is so nutty and so zany and so outrageous and so impossible and so unbelievable, it actually works. Bad acting and all. Just seeing 100 crooked Santas led by Jim Belushi dogpile on top of Arnold makes the whole outing worth it. It's also fun to watch the governator being laughed at by two smug store clerks who treat him like an imbecile simply because he didn't know it was too late to buy a Turbo Man for his son. Where have you been? Turbo Man is only the hottest action toy ever, duh! At this point, Schwarzenegger grabs them both by the collar, lifts them into the air, and says, "Where's your Christmas spirit?" Full of repeat watchability, I laugh out loud every single time. Number 10 on my list, Home Alone. I do love this movie, not the sequels, the original. I do love this movie, even though it was very overrated when it first came out. Would you be amazed to learn this was once the highest grossing film of all time? The premise is also far-fetched and difficult to swallow, but Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern brighten things up as the film's bumbling villains. Normally, I don't care for slapstick, but it works well here. Also, at the expense of sounding like a sentimental mushpot, I cannot watch the old man reconcile with his family without getting teary-eyed. I know, I sound like George Costanza on Seinfeld. John Williams wrote a beautiful score, which helps us forget the obvious elephant in the room. Macaulay Culkin cannot act. No matter. Everyone else in the movie is quite good. Even Culkin is effective in one scene, walking through his lonely neighborhood with his family gone, looking earnestly through decorated windows, watching families gather for Christmas Eve, and feeling left out as we listen to the modern but worthy Williams Carol, Somewhere in My Memory. It's ironic that this review follows Jingle All the Way. Schwarzenegger, by comparison to Culkin, comes across like Laurence Olivier. It's still worth watching every year. By the way, a couple of years ago, as I typed this list out for the first time on my laptop at Starbucks, the coffee shop, of course, was playing Christmas music in the background, and I was treated to Barbara Streisand's version of Jingle Bells. And it reminded me of something painful. Although I do not have a top 10 list of worst Christmas songs, this one would be absolutely, positively on the very highest pinnacle. Indeed, it could not possibly be higher. I actually like Babs as a singer, and I even own a few of her CDs, but her version of Jingle Bells, oh, let's see. How about if I just mercifully drop the subject? This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric Incorporated, license number 480539, WNS Electric.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. Now, one would expect a top 10 best holiday movies list to be followed by a top 10 worst list. But what kind of Scrooge would I be if I made sport of something near and dear to somebody else's heart? And yet, on the other hand, sometimes people do need warnings. Perhaps a compromise with a kinder, gentler Scrooge is in order. I plan to restrain myself and talk about just three movies that did not make my top 10 list. One is a mixed review. The others are so bad they deserve a spotlight of their own without being watered down by other bad reviews. Much as I regret criticizing anything that lifts up Christmas, somebody has to say it. Otherwise, the rocks themselves would cry out in pain. Mixed review, Disney's Babes in Toyland. Although it's quite corny in places, I cannot forget the thrill I had seeing this movie in the theater as a child. Considering when it was filmed, 1961, Babes in Toyland had wonderful special effects and plenty of Disney magic. If you can stay with it up to the time the children actually enter Toyland, about halfway through the movie, you will find that the wait was worth it. The March of the Toy Soldiers number and the final battle sequence are absolutely spectacular, even more so when we remember that this was before the time of computer animation. I am disappointed that this movie didn't become more popular. But with an all-star cast, including Ray Bolger, the Scarecrow from The Wizard of Oz, as an enjoyable villain this time, Tommy Kirk, Tommy Sands, and Annette Funicello of the early Disney family, the hilarious Ed Wynn, who everybody remembers as Uncle Albert from Mary Poppins, and here he's playing the toy maker himself, and timeless Christmas music from the original stage version, Babes in Toyland should be an annual tradition. Why then did it not make my top 10 list? Because my review is one of the most mixed I have ever given. The bad parts are so terrible, and the good parts are so wonderful. One not only feels frustrated, but must also wonder what went on in production. Either a lemon script was partially saved, or a brilliant script was pushed off the wall, and like Humpty Dumpty, who ironically would have blended in well with the background of this movie with its Mother Goose theme, no one could put it together again. There's little to redeem the first half of the film. In places, the songs and dialogue get so stupid and so childish, you would be embarrassed to have your friends or family walk into the room and catch you watching this albatross. Yes, the movie was made for children, so we need to cut a little slack, but not much. Although we can accept the fact that Mother Goose Village is a setting for youngsters, Disney's Hallmark genius and well-deserved reputation are generally demonstrated in an ability to entertain kids and adults alike. Not so this time. Early in the film, the talented actors are wasted with stilted dialogue that often rhymes, an interesting experiment that simply did not work. Yet in the second half of the movie, they're not rhyming anymore. Go figure. Once the kindergarten poetry stops, the conversations are crisp, witty, and at least a bit more realistic. Part one did feature some fabulous dance numbers, but honestly, you would do better to read the cliff notes and then fast forward to the second half. The movie, after all, is called Babes in Toyland, and trust me on this, the part about Toyland is better than the part filmed for Babes. I still love the movie, mostly for personal nostalgic reasons, but if I placed it on my top 10 list and you watched the first half, my reputation would be on the line. I do not love Babes in Toyland enough to put it high on a list, and I love it too much to put it on the bottom, so instead I offer this review alone, apart from any list at all. And now, on to those lousy movies There are too many bad Christmas videos to count them all. Undoubtedly, people will argue over the worst more than the best. I did not want to spend a lot of time talking about the clunkers. Instead, I will list the two I despise the most. Number one, the absolute worst Christmas movie of all time, The Grinch film version. Now, The Grinch was only the promotional title for its release in America. The official billing became Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Not just How the Grinch Stole Christmas, but Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas. If I wanted, I could review the title alone. This is not Dr. Seuss's version. In fact, it could not possibly be more the opposite of Dr. Seuss's version. It is Ron Howard's version. When all is said and done, this is not truly the same story, and it did not have the same message. Those are not insignificant points. Once again, I love the original Dr. Seuss book and the annual half-hour animated CBS special that Seuss, Theodore Geisel, his real name, also worked on. He was no longer alive when the bomb squad accidentally missed this WMD. Maybe God in his mercy took Geisel home first. Why do people feel the need to tamper with classics? Is it to put their own names on pieces of art that were already signed by others? Is it for money? They usually deny either of those reasons. Oh, I'm doing this as a tribute, they claim. I'm doing this as a tribute. In the case of director Ron Howard, I'm not sure if he would call this a tribute. Hopefully not. It would only make the project more of a travesty. To be fair, there were a few good things about the movie. Visually, it was stunning and fun to watch, simply from the standpoint of eye candy and beauty alone and clever gadgetry. And I suppose if we had to have a real live actor portraying the Grinch, Jim Carrey did about as good a job as anyone could. It also boasted one beautiful song, and that's it. I can compliment nothing else. Getting more out of me would be like trying to suck blood from a turnip. If only they'd released the song alone. But alas, we are dealing with Hollywood, where producers ask themselves only two related questions. Is this marketable, and will this sell? Seldom, if ever, do they wrestle with enough artistic integrity to raise their hands from across the big boardroom table and spit out the words, S-A-J-B, should we really do this? Is it really necessary? How do you take a 30-minute television special, even less if you minus the commercials, and make close to a two-hour movie out of it? Well, obviously, you have to pad the story. In this case, so much stuffing was jammed inside, we can barely taste the original turkey, although turkey is certainly an appropriate description for a film that should have borrowed the verbiage of Tim Burton's holiday title, The Nightmare Before Christmas. As for that padding, learn all about sensitivity and political correctness, as flashbacks show us a boy Grinch who grew up in a dysfunctional environment and was ridiculed by all the other little kids at Whoville Elementary School. Discover the sorrowful backstory about the girl he fell in love with who wanted nothing to do with him. See, the problem wasn't in his own nature. It was the fault of everyone else. Although the film does start with the familiar narration, his heart was two sizes too small, it then goes on to prove that his heart actually had nothing to do with the problem. It was the surroundings, his environment. Silly, didn't you know? But I've saved the best for last. Check out this new ingredient, something you've never, ever seen in a Christmas story before. The people of Whoville are only into the commercialism of Christmas. We'll be right back.
You've already heard some of the wonderful customer reviews of the Dangerous Christmas Ornament, but now listen to some highlights from a professional review by Lisa Ruth of Communities Digital News. The book is literally a page-turner that will delight children and adults alike. Readers will find a piece of themselves in Mike, whom Siegel portrays perfectly. He develops the 12-year-old deftly and makes him real to the readers. They will adore Aunt Lorene. They will remember their first love and the pain of betrayal from a friend. Caligula the cat is a wonderfully clever addition to the story. He steals the book with his caustic insight, making all readers wonder just what their own pets would say if they could talk. The real gift of the Dangerous Christmas Ornament is the lessons it weaves amid the adventure. It reminds us of the social and personal responsibility we share and the repercussions of our actions on those around us. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament has adventure, entertainment, and some extremely important lessons. What more could you ask for in a book?
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm reviewing How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the movie. If you heard me earlier in the program, I love the annual holiday classic, the animated version, the Dr. Seuss story. But this version that Ron Howard directed that hit the theaters a number of years ago. In this one, the people of Whoville are into the commercialism of Christmas. There's a theme we've never seen in a movie before. They have forgotten what Christmas is really all about. Oh, Ron Howard, you have certainly topped yourself this time. Rarely has such creativity enveloped the wonderful world of winter cinema. Just imagine a message decrying the commercialism of Christmas. I was so amazed, startled, and downright shocked I almost spilled my box of hot tamales into my lap. Only one person in Whoville protested commercialism. Cindy Lou Who. You remember her? Little Cindy Lou who was two. Only this time she's not two. She's old enough to give lectures on greed and other capitalistic invasions that conspire to wreck the holidays. Am I crazy? Wasn't Dr. Seuss's entire message that the people of Whoville were not into commercialism? Doesn't the Grinch learn this when he steals all their gifts, decorations, and food, only to find them singing and celebrating anyway? If asked why he felt compelled to change everything around, perhaps Howard would say, well, we needed more of a story. After all, the original was under 30 minutes, and we were making this into a two-hour feature. And therein lies the very source of his problem. The mistake was assuming this needed to be made in the first place. I will close with the irony of ironies. For the sake of money, for the sake of commercialism, Hollywood turned a beautiful Christmas tradition into a lecture against commercialism. Good one, guys. My other worst Christmas movie, Elf. All right, now I realize I may lose a lot of friends over this beloved classic. Admittedly, I am biased here. I generally do not find Will Ferrell funny. Since most of his movies are comedies, maybe you can see the problem. Ironically, he worked in the television series The Office when his four-episode appearance was floated as a possible replacement for Steve Carell. Even though originally my jaw dropped in sheer horror to hear Ferrell's name as a possible addition to my favorite sitcom, I was pleasantly surprised at how well he fit in. Alas, Ferrell did not end up becoming a regular on that show. But I did want to mention The Office, since it was one time I actually found this guy entertaining, and I owe the poor guy some kind of bone, even though it will not make up for the rest of my comments. So yes, for the sake of being fair and balanced, he was good in The Office. As for Ferrell's other work, let's see, how shall I put this? I'm sure in real life he's a nice guy, but on the screen, seeing him in a preview is like watching a flashing yellow warning light or seeing the words caution. Regardless of how novel the original idea may have been, Will Ferrell eventually joined up with the project. Look, I know a lot of you think the movie was cute, and I'm not trying to be unsentimental here. I don't mind stories about elves. I loved Lord of the Rings. I'm looking forward to seeing The Hobbit. If those trilogies didn't elevate elves to heroic status, I don't know what did. And you've already heard my two installments of The Santa Claus featured on my top 10 list. Both films were literally loaded with elves from start to finish. No problem with elves. I want to make that abundantly clear. I am hoping to avoid a lawsuit just in case there's some elf anti-defamation league out there somewhere. What was wrong with Elf, you ask? Well, if you saw the movie and if you are a Will Ferrell fan, nothing I say will matter, and there's little point in wasting time to convince you otherwise. If such is the case, just ignore this critique and enjoy the movie. I can be happy for you if you can appreciate the freedom you have in a country that does not allow dissenters to be tortured. But torture is what I'll experience if I should ever again in my life have to be in the same room with this video. On the other hand, if you did not see the film and you want to know what was wrong with it, perhaps brevity would be most effective here. It stinks. I guess that was a little too brief. Sure, okay. I'll provide a little more detail. It really stinks. Oh, you want more? It sucks raw eggs with two straws. Okay. You're looking for more depth and sophistication here. Fine. I suppose I could rationalize my lack of substance by saying there was nothing three-dimensional in the film to grab a hold of, but with 3D movies making a comeback, I don't want to give the studio any ideas. Elf in 3D might just end life as we've known it. All right, I'm getting there. Why was it so terrible? Aside from my distaste for Ferrell himself, it's a tough one to put your finger on. I could say Elf is a stupid story, but several of the movies on my top 10 list were also stupid stories. I guess I could put it this way. There are two kinds of stupid: funny stupid and stupid stupid. The difference is in the acting and the writing. As I've mentioned already, with fantasy, if we believe in the characters, we will believe in the story. With better writing and better acting, the premise of this movie might have come across as quite clever and original. Too often, Hollywood remakes something good, like The Grinch, and turns it into a disaster. Here's a thought. Why not remake something that was bad but had potential? If that is ever done, maybe I'll enjoy a future version of Elf. I've heard they actually made it into a Broadway musical. I haven't seen it yet, but who knows? But in this present incarnation, no cigar. Ferrell, a human who was raised by elves and grew up believing he was an elf, and his real human father, James Caan, with whom he reunites, have zero chemistry, although the film cried out for the kind of chemistry Sonny visited upon Carlo in The Godfather. As for Ferrell's love interest, Zooey Deschanel, she's cute, and at times the romantic subplot had its charms, but all charm evaporated when Zooey sang Santa Claus is Coming to Town in order to lift the spirit of Christmas so that Santa's sleigh could function. You couldn't sell a plot like this to the 99-cent store. Well, maybe you could, because Elf was a hit. Despite these flaws, the main problem does keep coming back to Will Ferrell. I guess this is one of those opposition reviews, the kind you might find in Superman's Bizarro universe. Just as the Santa Claus would have flopped if not for Tim Allen, Elf might have succeeded if not for Will Ferrell. Now, I should say there was one bright spot to the film, Bob Newhart as Will Ferrell's elf dad for 5 minutes. I thoroughly enjoyed myself, thinking I had discovered a new Christmas treat. Unfortunately for my soon-to-be-dashed holiday hopes, after those 5 minutes, the movie continued. Well, there you have it, but hey, that's just my opinion. What do I know? If most people liked the movie, I must be in the wrong. After all, the majority is usually right, isn't it? Of course, there was a time when the majority thought slavery was okay, and then there was that other time when the majority said you couldn't split the atom. Never mind. Just go rent the film. If you like it, you like it. If you hate it, you have about as much fun as I did tearing it to shreds. Your Christmas may still be merry. After all, we're listening to the Bob Siegel Show, and our board operator, Nick, is also a movie buff. So I invited him in the last portions of our show to kind of give his two cents, and we will do that when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Bob Siegel's new fantasy novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, is now available on Kindle, Nook, and in print copy. Check out some of the wonderful customer reviews on Amazon.com. Reviews such as this one. Wow, what an incredible story. Well-written, believable characters. The story takes twists and turns that keep surprising the reader. Although it is written from the perspective of a preteen, it is most appealing to an adult.
takes one back to those feelings and longing for adventure. I can't wait for the sequel. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
And now I want to reintroduce Nick Lane again. Nick sometimes chimes in when we do our movie review shows. And Nick, I wanted to get your opinion of my favorites and least favorites, and also hear what some of your own favorite Christmas movies are.
Well, I have to, first off, my absolute favorite Christmas movie of all time, and it is one you mentioned, so I'm happy, is A Christmas Story.
Yes, that with the kid with the BB gun. Do you watch the marathon that they do on one of the channels? They show it for 24 hours. They show it nonstop on Christmas Eve.
I do. every year I watch it at least multiple times, and most of it, I have it on DVD. And you would think, you know, why do you need it on DVD when, you know, TBS or whatever shows it, you know, a billion times on Christmas Day? Well, that's because I love that movie so much. I think it's probably somewhere on one of my favorite movies of all time list.
It's just ingenious. They really capture what it's like to feel like a little kid, even though it takes place in the 1940s.
It really does. And so much to the point where whenever I watch that, I'm that little kid, because we've all been to that. We've all had that experience as a kid where we've all wanted that one gift. And some of us are still that way. We all want that one gift, and we have our heart set on that one gift. And when we go through the wrapping paper and we unwrap it and we see it, and we're just like, you know, our day is made. I mean, we've all been there. It's incredibly relatable.
And the dad seems so clueless throughout the movie, and to realize that he was the one who remembered and got him that gun at the end.
Right. Completely redeems himself in the whole
movie. Yeah, just hearing the dad swearing with the furnace. Of course, it was Yosemite Sam kind of swearing. Dang, nabbit, duck, darn, dang.
Which he does himself later on in the movie.
It's just hilarious. I loved all of it. When they meet that bully, They're playing music from Peter and the Wolf. From When the Wolf Comes. That was just brilliant.
It's genius how they use it too. The way like his little brother Randy, you know, when they're running away, you hear that.
And then as soon as the bully makes his appearance, it's his.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
It was great. So you must have liked The Wonder Years too. Then
I love The Wonder Years.
It was very derivative of A Christmas Story. Only that one was set in the 60s.
It really does, and I love that show for the exact same reason. Yeah, it's relatable, and it takes you to moments that everybody guaranteed has gone through.
Yeah,
at one point.
Exactly. And that's where a movie can be for adults and kids at the same time. Kids
Absolutely.
Are drawn into the story, but adults are reminiscing as to what it felt like to be a kid and think like a kid.
That said, my mom finds the movie boring, which proves
I have
the
found
point.
More men like it than women. Men relate to the BB gun, and the women relate to the you shoot your eye out kid part of it.
It does prove that not everybody can be perfect.
Yeah. Oh, and then when his dad opens up that lamp with the chorus girl leg, and then he turns, and the wife's just panicking, and then he goes outside, he looks through the window, he goes, you should see what
crowd.
It looks. He's like, you should see what it looks like from out here. He's just
and a little crowd starts going behind him.
Oh my gosh.
Oh man, it's a major award.
It's hilarious.
Yeah,
hilarious.
It's a great movie.
Hey, piece of trivia, that friend of his that walks up and asks him what he's looking at is the director of the movie.
Oh, really?
Yes, and then later on when the kid gets in line to see Santa Claus, guy that sends him to the back, that's Gene Shepard,
who wrote the
original book that this was based on.
Yeah, I knew that one. He's also the narrator of the movie.
And he's the narrator. I'd like to get his original book and read it. It sounds like it's probably even better and just ingeniously told.
Yeah, I hear it's good. It's been on my must-get-on-Kindle list for a while.
There you go.
Another one that I really, really like, and I guess I like it more than you, but I suppose it's probably because of more sentimental reasons. I was right in that prime age when it came out. I was 5 years old when Home Alone came out.
Oh, no, I did. Well, that did make my top 10 list.
It did.
On the bottom, but the top 10.
It's a little bit higher on mine.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I guess as an adult, I can completely see your point on Macaulay Culkin. Although a lot of the movie, he is a very wooden actor, but there are certain little emotional nuances that he does that I think kind of saves him a little bit. Like like, I really, like, one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie is actually when he's in the church talking to the old man.
Yeah, that was a very touching scene.
It really was. I thought the old man did a good job, and I thought Macaulay Culkin did a decent job there, too, of just being, you know, the kid who just, you know, says it like it is.
And, yeah, there were times he was just too over the top, but I agree with you. There were other times where he did come across as a real little kid.
Yeah, I think it was kind of a mixed bag,
yeah.
I would say, in that movie.
Yeah,
Daniel Stern and Joe Pesci.
They are just hilarious.
They were,
just...
and I think they were so good. Joe Pesci especially, I think he was so good, he pigeonholed himself.
Yeah, I know. That kind of stereotyped him a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit, but I was a big fan. I still am. We have a little tradition at our apartment where I live with my girlfriend. We have a little tradition where we watch a movie every week, and we alternate over who picks what. And I think this is her pick this week, and I think she said this week it's going to be Home Alone. So I think I'm going to be watching Home Alone on Friday.
Now, have you seen that horrible sequel, Home Alone 2 Lost in New York?
Yeah, we have it. That's because she likes it more than me.
Wow.
She actually likes it.
They retreaded the whole story again. He's lost again.
But it's bigger.
He has to fight villains again. It's got to be the same two villains, and they broke out. They didn't have the old man this time, but they have an old lady. I mean, good
but
grief.
Since it's a sequel, they have to make it bigger. And how do they make it bigger? Instead of him being lost in his little town and house, instead of being alone there, he's all alone in New York.
Yeah, it was Ooh. Just horrible. Now, they made even two more sequels after that, which I never even watched. But
I didn't even give him the time of day either.
It's just, they do such an injustice. A legitimate sequel is if there's really, honestly, for artistic reasons, a new story to tell. An illegitimate sequel is if money was the only reason they made it. And then they feel the need to retread everything about the first one.
Yeah, and that one is absolutely one of those one of those moments. One movie that wasn't on your list that would be on mine was National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Yeah, no, I do like Chevy Chase. That one, I just don't... I mean, it's got some laughs, but tell us why you like this one.
I'm not a big Chevy Chase guy. There's a few Chevy Chase movies I like. I liked Fletch. I love the Three Amigos.
Oh, the Three Amigos is great.
Hilarious.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
This one, I also love the original Vacation, and I don't know. I just thought it was really... Maybe I like it if for the classic, lighting the Christmas lights outside... scene.
Well, you're not alone. My son-in-law, it's his favorite of all the Christmas movies, Christmas Vacation.
It just kind of has that same kind of charm that Vacation has, I thought, where it was just, again, it was kind of relatable. You know, everyone kind of has those, at least one of those kind of crazy Christmas experiences, and I don't know. I liked it. I mean, if it was on my list, it'd probably be somewhere down there. But it would make my list. And one other one quickly, as far as the TV specials, I agree on both of them that you mentioned.
It's Charlie Brown Christmas and the Grinch. Yeah.
Not a Christmas without them.
Absolutely.
As far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's like stuffing and hanging your stockings. It's just part of the season.
It's just part of it. And another one in my household that's right up there with those is Mickey's Christmas Carol.
Where Ludwig van Dyck is Scrooge and Mickey's Bob. That's not a bad version. That's not a bad version.
Yeah, I really like it too. I mean, some people prefer the Flintstones version more, or the Mr. Magoo one more.
Now, I never heard of the Flintstone version.
Yeah, the Flintstone one was good. I think it came out in the 60s, maybe even the 70s.
Yeah, of course, the Mr. Magoo's been a classic for many years.
Yeah, that one one's kind of become a perennial
thing.
Did
you see the one that Disney came out with a couple of years ago?
No.
Where it was the Christmas Carol? Yes, and forgetting him in the Grinch, he was very good in this. And they showed it in 3D, just beautiful, just a beautiful version.
I heard it was better and darker than you would think.
It is darker, and I again say, and I know you said earlier that you hadn't seen it, the musical version of Scrooge. Not the one starring Kelsey Grammer, but the one starring Albert Finney. I think you would really like that.
Another quick one, very quickly, is speaking of Christmas Carol, I saw one very recently from the early 50s starring Alistair Sim.
Oh, yes, that's a great one. Well,
yeah, that's a good one.
I read recently there's been something like over 200 different versions of Christmas Carol
made by movies.
Definitely the best thing Charles Dickens ever wrote. And
absolutely.
I enjoy reading the original novel every Christmas, too, just in the original words.
Haven't gotten there yet, but
I intend
to.
It's very short. It's a good read. Okay, Nick, well, I will see you next week, everybody, and wish you a Merry Christmas season as we continue the Christmas season on The Bob Siegel Show.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.